Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Incredible, fantastic, superb, stupendously amazing episode of everybody's favorite bonus content on Patreon and Supercast, ATT Confidential.
Right. I'm Braden.
I'm Dan. And now that you've set everybody's expectations exceedingly high, let's continue. Let's disappoint them.
Yes. Everyone was shitting on me
for
the last couple bonus recordings I did. Like, normally I'm like, it's for bonus.
Sure.
Who's watching these? So I'm like sitting here in my dark. I'm sitting
the
here.
The people who are watching you are the people who are actually paying to listen to it.
Well, I thought honestly, I was like, most people are going to listen to the pod version. So I'm sitting like in the dark. I got all the lights turned off. It's just like, basically a fucking
goblin
shadow hat fucking, man. Yeah. And people were like roasting me, like, hey, turn on some goddamn fucking lights.
Braden the Hobgoblin just like sitting in there.
So I've turned on 25% of the lights for this confidential.
There you go.
Absolute wild one. I was not sure what we were gonna get, because we talked about Thetis Monster last week. This week we're talking about a time when the CIA enlisted the help of vampires.
Yeah, Count Dracula.
Count Dracula to overthrow foreign.
People didn't know that. The CIA has a good working relationship with the Count of Transylvania.
Yeah, he just dispatches the CIA at a moment's notice. Bats will come by. Yeah. They just, the second the CIA flares up the bat signal,
blah, here's my action report. I am writing to you for reimbursement of my per diem. You never get that reimbursed.
I heard you're paying for miles. 1 mile. 2 mile. They're like, okay, how many miles? Just say the fucking number of miles we owe you for.
And he's writing, it's all like typed out. Like, one, two,
It's like, this is the biggest is like, waste of government
this is
resources.
15 pages of just him counting. What the hell?
Like, we get paid by the hour.
I just sit by the fax machine for 2 hours.
Recovering these. But this is the fact that, like, there is no depth. The CIA, just when you think you're like, all right, that's rock bottom, you'll hear a new true CIA story and you're like, God damn, they were ruthless.
CIA in the 50s, 60s, like anything went. That was like, it was like carte blanche. You had a very old boys network. There was absolutely no government oversight. So it was pretty much just like anybody doing anything that they want in order to, and then justify it with the, you know, we're beating communism. That's it. As long as you wrote in there, like, hey, to beat communism or to contain
communism.
Like,
they're like,
yeah, sure, whatever.
Someone opens an office room and they're just fucking drugging a coworker. They're like,
can't let the Ruskies win.
Communism?
Can't let the Ruskies win.
They're like, carry on.
Carry on. You're a patriot, sir.
Salute them as they go. We're all patriots here.
So specifically this one, geographically, this one happens in Southeast Asia, which we are both familiar with, some of it.
Oh, yeah. We have the original Southeast Asian correspondent.
Yeah, that's me. Most of this story, or these reports of these CIA operations, the specific ones that we're addressing today, take place in the Philippines, or PI, as some people like to call it. And a little bit background on Philippines, you know, post World War II, or at least like into World War II, you kind of had the Philippines, which were located in a very strategic position in the Pacific. Everybody kind of knows that they're a good place to kind of launch strikes against, you know, at the time our enemy was Japan. Yeah.
You're like, God damn, if they ever mobilize an infantry again, we're in trouble.
And so
we've got to poison their youth with anime.
And I mean, and then most people, like, I think in most, you know, overall general history classes, like, you don't get a lot of the picture of, like, what was going on in the Philippines. Like, it wasn't just like MacArthur when he waltzed in there and was like, hey, you know, we're here. He steps on the beach and, you know, is like, ah, we're here. It's Japan's final days. No, like, the Philippines have been fighting in guerrilla warfare for, you know, for months against the, perpetrating campaigns against the Japanese occupying forces at the time. So in 1942, a lot of the Philippines, like some of the rural populations, they formed what was known as the Hakbalahap, which is like the short for, I'll try this. Okay. Hukbo Nung Bayan Laban Sahapon, which translates to the people.
Tagalog is a very, that's racist, Dan. It's racist.
I probably said it wrong. I made the effort. That's important. That's what's important.
They go by the Hucks for short.
Yes, they go by the Hucks for short.
But colloquially. And I'm sure they only go by the Hucks for us Westerners. Yeah. They don't go by the Hucks.
Nobody says no. I guarantee nobody locals even call it that whole thing. But yes, they are called the Hucks to shorten that. And the translation to their full name comes out to the People's Army against the Japanese, essentially. And then
which is long for the peeps.
Yes. So the group was primarily consisted of peasant farmers, and they were kind of, you know, put together by the local government and some of the, you know, those who identified, at least philosophically, I'm not sure about like politically, like communists, like back then you would have, you know, communist or socialist leaders in their communities. And so
We know, especially on confidentials, the second you start hearing farmers and peasants tied together with communism, you know the good old CIA ain't far behind to squash this.
Yeah, nobody's happy about that when farmers and I guess you classify them as peasants.
They want workers'
rights. They want to industrialize and own the rights of production.
Who's gonna make our goods?
How are we going to make money?
How are we gonna exploit them?
Yeah. How are we going to perpetrate our imperialist agenda? Essentially. But that was one of their main. Yeah. One of their
this
main.
Cannot stand.
One of their main tenets was, you know, very anti-imperialist. At the time. So, but they were like, they had a desire for social reform because, even back then, as far as, you know, Philippines had been occupied by, you know, they had been a colony of the Spanish Empire at one point and then liberated by the United States, which then began our long, and close relationship with the people of the Philippines. But when the Japanese came down there and then they started occupying parts of the Philippines, like I said, it is a strategic position, resources, all of that. The Hucks kind of engaged in guerrilla warfare. You know, they did a ton of stuff. Like they were extremely active, you know, sabotage, you know, intelligence gathering, all that good stuff. You know, taking out important strategic.
The amount of information you can gather by just kind of leaning on a rake for a little while and just dropping some eaves.
Yeah. It's just sweeping.
You're just like peeking your head through a door, yeah. Right? Like, well, what's
just
going
cleaning.
On
right. No speak Japanese. Right. And, you know, like out of there. At the end of World War II, after the Japanese had been removed from the Philippines, and then, you know, they were like I said, liberated, quotation marks, by American forces. This marked a turning point for the Hux. Now, the Hux had kind of like they'd kind of based their whole thing on, you know, kicking out the Japanese and then we're going to establish Philippine independence. And then, you know, they were very much like wanted the Philippines to kind of be to be their own country, understandably.
And they didn't. And they didn't want to swap one oppressor for another. They're like, hey, we didn't want Japan to occupy and we don't want you to occupy either. Like everyone.
I mean,
everyone out.
It's very much kind of like the Cuba stuff where it's like the United States, like, yeah, we'll help you. And like, yeah, we're totally for you guys having your own government, you know, all that stuff. And then once they finish, they're like, okay,
as long as this guy.
Yeah. Like, okay. Like the Cuba's like, okay, you guys are done. Like, get out of here. And America's like, wait a second.
No, that wasn't the deal. What are you talking about?
That didn't turn out very well for anybody. Yeah. So now as the Hux kind of, their heyday was during, you could say during the Japanese occupation. And once that passed over, the Cold War and those sentiments kind of take over, where this kind of led to the Hux kind of being sidelined and their ideologies being put, you know, out to pasture kind of. And then the Philippines began a kind of gradual shift in their opinions of the Hux from them being freedom fighters to them actually being rebels against the duly elected Philippine government.
How quickly that changes. Hey, look at these freedom fighters. And now it's like, you don't like what we have to say, you fucking rebels.
It's like, you know,
literally nothing changed with them. They're still fighting the exact same thing.
Yeah. They're still like, wait, like we were fighting for this and, you know, we're helping out.
We're still fighting for this.
And it's like, they are, from some reports, like the Hux were not like a monolithic group. They did have their own like factions within, you know, fractious nature of these kinds of organizations. You still have
the Huck Wolf Pack.
Yeah.
Huck NWO.
Yeah.
All sorts of different factions of breakaway Huck.
And so now, while this is all kind of going on in the fledgling Philippine government is kind of starting to take form, enter in one Edward Geary Lansdale.
Dude, this guy is legitimately, if you remember the movie Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise?
Yes.
He's Tom Cruise in that movie.
I guarantee you.
He's just like, hey, I'm a fucking marketing guy. I don't deal with it. They're like, we're going to want you to deal in war here. He's like, okay, let me see what I can do.
I guarantee I haven't listened to a bunch of podcasts or watched any YouTubes about this, but I guarantee somebody has referred to this guy, and probably an accurate comparison analogy would be him as like the Don Draper of the United States military what he is.
That's great.
So Lansdale is people label him as kind of a key figure in the United States' counterinsurgency and like development of original like psychological operations during the mid 20th century.
Yeah.
So he's credited with a lot of kind of
the misinformation advertiser of the fucking propaganda campaigns.
Yeah. He's and like, it's not and it's not like he was some like big, like scientist or psychologist or anything like this. No, he was literally like an admin. Like he was an admin. Like that's what he did. Like his background was just like pretty much advertising like that and kind of selling stuff.
It's wild.
That's it.
Yeah. Sales. He was basically that fucking, that Brandon Williams. He's like, I'm pretty sure we can fucking scare the Filipinos. No, it's not that complicated, bro.
Yeah. And so, like, I mean, he started his whole career, just even his civilian career. He worked for a San Francisco advertising firm where, you know, he developed his understanding of, you know, persuasion and swaying of a public opinion. And then he got commissioned as a lieutenant and then transferred to the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, which most people know is the precursor to the CIA. Like that was the very original form of it. After World War II was finished, Lansdale was actually transferred to the United States Air Force. And then in the Air Force, Lansdale was kind of briefed in on intelligence work. And then there, this included him taking on assignments for like assessing the capabilities and activities of other countries. And then marking places that would be crucial in counterinsurgency work later on. Now, Lansdale had a brief assignment in Japan in World War II, which was really important for later, because once he got that, and once he stayed there and was able to kind of like insert himself into the Japanese culture somewhat bit, this gave him kind of a unique understanding of like the Asian political and social dynamics of post in like a post-war in a post-war landscape, which is like, I think it's important because it's like, I don't know, some of these things is like you realize, I can imagine like him living in Japan being like, okay, everybody around here is like them being mostly a homogenous culture, you know, it's unlike the United States where you have like hundreds, you know, of different cultures kind of melding together. Japanese is kind of like the whole on the surface, and a lot of the majority is kind of like they're all kind of have the same beliefs or based on kind of around the same thing. So it's like you can apply their very superstitious to an extent and these kinds of qualities that being like, okay, like I see all this stuff and now where can I apply this? Where can I take this knowledge on? And then when they go into the Philippines, he kind of falls back on some of that, I'm sure, knowledge, and is kind of like, I know how to play this one, right? So Lansdale is begins like they brought him in to basically advise the Philippine government on how to counter the Hux, because now the Hux, like the Hux are kind of full insurgency, if not like, I'm not sure exactly, like you could be like terrorists, but they were kind of like still moving into like the political sphere of being like hampering a transfer to like a fully democratic government within the United States. So Lansdale was very much a hearts and minds guy. You know, most people is like he understood the concept that and the importance of being able to kind of undermine the support of the Hux. Like you had to take away their platform and like their base, their support base from the people, and then you could, you know, severely weaken their influence.
And then they're like, how do you think we can do that? And he's like, I got some pretty wild ideas I'd like to try. And they're like, let's do it. Whatever you think. What do you think? And he's like, how, like, is there any, like, anything I can't do? They're like, why are you asking that? And he's like, just checking. Nah. They're like, no, this, as long as you break this up, it's all good. And he's like, okay.
So.
All right, Theorites, this episode of Alien Theorist Theorizing is brought to you again by Mood.com. These beauties rule. It's an online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges. No more sleepless nights, stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC, and they deliver them right to your door. And now you can get 20% off your first Mood.com order with promo code ALIEN. That's right, promo code ALIEN. Listen, when I'm locking in for a nice night of theorizing, I love the gummies Mood.com offers. They have sleepy time gummies, epic euphoria gummies, perfect for those days when there's nothing going on. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. Best of all, not only does Mood.com stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code ALIEN. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ALIEN. That's right, 20% off with promo code ALIEN.
All right.
Some of the stuff, like, if we think about it now, this is like psych 101 stuff where it's like, okay, so what are we going to do to this? Let's just start spreading rumors. He's like, let's just lie. Let's just tell people that the Hux are doing this and that they're for this and that these, you know, people who are involved in the Hux are this. Like, very simple stuff where it's just like, okay, we're just going to tell people lies. We're going to lie about the Hux.
Yeah.
We're going to put out some information about them. We're going to put out some nasty rumors and stuff like that. And then, you know, that'll start and that'll kick it off. And you're like, and back then, this is some kind of like, you know, this is some groundbreaking stuff. They're like, write that down. Now it's like, well, duh.
Lie? We're just going to start fucking you could just a misinformation campaign.
You could just lie. People go out there and lie.
And they're like, holy shit. And then they're like, you know, so that starts spreading. And then, you know, Ed's like, old Eddie boy's like, how can we fucking turn this up a notch? He's like, you know what? From my time here, he's like, I've learned that, you know, these people, real superstitious. He's like, how can I utilize that against them? And then he's like, you know what? This is great. I want to do this. Well, I got this my next campaign idea. I got it. It's great. We're going to call it the Eye of God. And we're going to go into these villages and make them think and paint the Eye of God on their doors to make them think that God is watching them and he knows that they're, you know, supporting the Hawks and they shouldn't be. And God is against them. And they're like, shit, fucking write that down too. This is great. This is great, Eddie.
Yeah. And so they go ahead and they start writing this stuff down and start taking it to the streets, essentially. And, you know, so this stuff starts working. So they're like, hey, you know, people are on board for the people are on board for this. And, the, you know, the government that's supporting Lansdale and like is sympathetic to the U.S. interests is being like, hey, yeah, okay, okay, okay. Once stuff gets really serious and Lansdale starts really, you know, pushing that thing there, he begins what is known as the Aswang campaign.
We call it Aswang in the West here.
Yeah. That, and I believe we talked about this specific time. Yeah, I know we've mentioned it at some point.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, "Ah, oh, the old ass wing, the sucker of blood." Yes.
Yeah. So we've discussed this particular legendary creature on some of our other case files, and it's been mentioned.
Case files, and I think maybe a confidential. I actually think we've. On a, like a vampire confidential, we talked about different types.
Right.
The Aswang was definitely one of them.
Yeah. And Aswang is, it's a similar, I guess it's kind of a combination somewhat of like both vampire and witch, and is kind of known for preying on humans. It's a very, it's a very Filipino creature. And it's like, it's still to this day, there are people who are like, no, the Aswang is very real. It's a very, very,
well, thing. Yeah, there's still villages and stuff that'll like, think they're like cursed by an Aswang and will like root the village trying to like find it and like clear it of like it's basically the Aswang is like almost like the fucking kind of like the Mothman, right? Like the bringer of doom. Like when the Aswangs are around, it's like, you know, crops are failing, people are getting sick, like it's a lot of times it's attributed to like when a lot of bad stuff is happening around, they're like, ah, it's a goddamn Aswang.
So yeah. And then if you have this creature that is so deeply ingrained in, Filipino folklore, it's like naturally the Hucks are also part of that as well. So the Huck gorillas were a very superstitious bunch, and kind of, Lansdale got a hold of that information and was like, oh, and an idea starts to form. So
he's like, Aswang, you say.
So an operation was held where they started to spread a rumor that there were Aswang, kind of like somewhere being located in the area of like these Huck held areas, like these Huck strongholds. And they were like, okay, like they started to kind of like put out these rumors, you know, they put out to their intelligence sources that these Aswang were lurking somewhere near
sightings
these places.
And like,
right.
Like, oh, they'd start with like the whispers, like, oh, we saw an Aswang in, you know, in the forest that night. Right? And it would spread like wildfire. Mm-hmm. These people were terrified of these things.
I mean, it doesn't take that much to kind of like, you know, you can imagine just them out there, CIA operas, like here's freaking $20. To some kid, yeah. You know, here, like, you just go out here and just tell this guy that you saw something strange out on the, you know, out in the jungle and whatever. And then once they did that, you have the like all that started being out, like, to reinforce these ideas and like this action that is happening. Lansdale would contract out, like he'd move some of his forces out into the areas, and they would have like their operatives like essentially like crawling through the woods at night, like moving around, you know, shaking bushes and stuff. It's what I can imagine. Like they would, you know, kind of to set the Huck on edge, being like, oh, you know, to kind of confirm these ideas that something was out there, like something was, you know, whatever. And then they would just disappear. So then you'd get this kind of like probably creeping sense of paranoia on the Hucks and being like, you know, superstitious paranoia that no, it's really out there, man. Like, you know, what are we gonna do?
Is it out there? Like, I heard it's taking people. I heard this, right? And like, rumors fly. I mean, it's not like you could check in with people back then and be like, text you, be like, hey, I heard someone from your village went missing. They're like, no, Like, you can't. So it's just like, it's straight rumor mill.
So, and so to kind of set it all off, because the objective was to get the Hux to like leave this area. They wanted them out. They wanted them to stop operating in this area. They wanted them out so they could like move in and whatever. And just, they were just causing problems. So the culmination of this entire operation was essentially like they had a team go out there. And I think this is described
this is described in
like Lansdale's autobiography is like essentially, and it's like a little blurb. It's just like, it's really weird because it's just a tiny little blurb.
And you're like, do you just admitting to war crimes?
Yeah.
My guy.
And he's like, yeah, we basically had a team go out there and kidnap one of the Huck fighters. And then
as they would be on a night mission, these guys would be suited up in the dark and they would snatch like the last guy in the group. So it's like when they get to someone, they're like, where'd that guy go? Where'd he go?
So they would go ahead and just, they snatch this guy off and then they, boop, boop, they pop two holes in his neck real quick, as would be, you know, that would show like, this is hard to deny evidence that this guy has been bitten by a vampire. And then they would drain out the blood. Yeah. They drained out the blood. And so
they would hang the body, let the blood drain. And then once the body was completely drained of blood, they would go and, throw the corpse into the bushes near the camp to be found, so that they'd be like, it's holy shit. Fucking one of our boys got fucking ass wanged.
And then once that got out, once those bodies were discovered, the Hux just picked up and left. They're gone. There's just no, like, this is it. No, a swung on the leash. We got to leave.
This is like a big thumbs up from like the higher ups to old Eddie boy. They're like, he's like, fucking nailed that one. We love that mutilating that corpse and throwing it and saying it was the ass wing. Excellent work. Couldn't have done it ourselves.
There you go.
A plus work. The wild thing to me is like when historians look at this, they're like, well, yes, that is, our view of a vampire is like that double neck, but it's like, that's not necessarily what the Filipinos believe that aswangs would do. So historians are saying, they're like, while Ed and the CIA were like, we scared them away by this fake aswang story, the real reason they left is because they may have been like, someone's in the woods kidnapping us and mutilating our friends, like mutilating the bodies,
leave,
right? And they're like, we should leave because there's someone out there mutilating our friends and draining their blood and then throwing them for us to find.
They're like,
we should leave.
Might have not, they definitely would have been, they might not have been like, it was an Oswang, but they were like, dude, the predator's out there. Like,
like someone's out there fucking, and then leaving the corpses for us to, the mutilated corpses for us to find. Yeah. As some like show of force, we need to leave. We're not safe here.
Yeah, I can imagine the director of the Predator like reading this and be like, let's do this. This is it. This is it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude. It's wild to me. Like when I read that, I was like I read it, there's like a historian like excerpt of like, well, actually, like while the CIA says that work, they have no idea. And it's just as likely that they were just like, holy fuck, someone's killing our friends.
Or someone knows we're here and killing us and we need to go.
Like, killing us and mutilating the body and then leaving it as like some sort of warning. We're obviously being watched.
I'd be like,
you're like, holy fuck. And these are like villagers. These aren't like fucking militia men. They're like also villagers. They're like, they're rebel force. So it's like, this is probably someone you grew up with, like a long-term friend or someone you've known who's now just getting mutilated in the woods. You're like, all right, well, fuck this.
Time to go.
We got
to
go. And the CIA is like, yeah, we did it. We fooled those dummies with our fake cryptid stories and then murdering people and mutilating the corpses. Cool. Like, I was like, you guys shouldn't have probably wrote that one down. Like, realistically,
well,
that's an embarrassing one.
Or this whole thing is a cover up for them actually contracting Dracula to go in there and being like, yeah, this is a CIA cover up of a cover up.
the old double cover up. Yes.
Actually, yeah, this is how the CIA covers up their secret vampire squad that they
The links to Transylvania on this one are thick. So it's hard.
According to some reports, a very suave Eastern European man showed up one day with a box full of
wearing
dirt.
Wearing like a high collared like cape. Yeah.
Stupid.
Fucking ghostly pale. This is Zell. This has Zell written all over
it. Yeah. The numbers, Mason.
There was another three letter agency that possibly involved.
Where's that murder ATT. Board? Start fucking our red lines out here. It's him. It's all him. It's always been him.
it's just wild to me that it's like that, like these things, like you, we weren't, this was only to be like, you were murdering people. Like legit, that's murder. Murdered yes, someone murder. Because like they wanted to vote a different political way in their own country.
Right.
That we had, like the CIA had no reason to be in and interfere with that election. And they resorted to murder people. And then you go like, yeah, communism's bad. We must defeat it. And I'm like, were the communists fucking mutilating people? You know what I mean? On the other side?
So
were they like,
So the CIA wasn't even done yet. Like that was like, that whole thing was like, wasn't even the end of the whole thing. So, like this all was like a precursor to the kind of the overall plan of basically, they wanted to enthrone a kind of a democratically elected government that was, you know, friendly to US interests. So Lansdale, go ahead and it involved himself. And they're saying that, you know, lended a lot more help than they should have been and gave it a definite advantage to the rise of Ramon Magsaysay, who was like who was the president of the Philippines, like right after this. So, this is probably, they said this, it's one of the more notable examples of the CIA's influence in foreign politics, like during the Cold War era, because it's like, it's not hard to kind of make the connections where, and you know, I actually have some direct like direct confessions of like people like, no, yeah, we helped him put him in power, and it's like we helped him. Magsaysay, who was formerly he had been the Secretary of National Defense during World War II for the Philippines, and apparently like he kind of already started off had like a pretty good base, and then that kind of pointed, you know, put a spotlight on him for Lansdale.
Like, he's like, I'll stop the Aswang invasion.
Oh, yeah. It's always good to have a cryptid to kind of get the people all riled up. We know that from the Chupacabra. Like,
if you can say you'll exterminate the cryptids that are. Murdering people in the mountain villages. I mean, you've got all the support, right?
And so
you're the People's Party at that point,
almost. So then Lansdale. I mean, this stuff's always really funny to me because it's like the political involvement is always like it's just stuff that's like almost common sense that you're like, okay. So Lansdale basically told Magsaysay like, okay, you know, this is what we need to do to get rid of the Hux, and this is how we need to discredit the Hux, and you know, do all this stuff, the rumors and all that things, and then the Aswang stuff. And then he's like, but also, the Hux have some pretty good ideas about some of this stuff, like, you know, these civic action programs and some of this stuff. People love these, like these social reforms that fight against poverty and social injustice. Yeah, this stuff's really good. So just do that stuff, you know, like, and it's like pulling the rug out from under them, like all that stuff that they want to do. And I think the Hux were really like they had those ideas, but they also kind of wanted they were big proponents of the like pushing for the like full scale industrialization or strong industrialization efforts for the Philippines themselves. So they wouldn't have to rely on other countries and like domestic production and these kinds of things, which eventually it's like, once the U.S. put in their government, it's like, OK, now they didn't do all that stuff. So you basically had reliance on the United States and their provide like their producers to kind of import stuff in and bring it in. So like there's all these crazy reports about like what Lansdale did to him and his CIA operatives to put that Meg Say-Say like into.
Oh, buddy, they all got condos. They all got condos. Let's be real, like beachside condos somewhere. All of them.
And like all like the allegations that are out there, like everything from like, you know, they providing financial, like easy stuff, like, okay, providing national financial support, you know, let's say here's some money and whatever, to stuff a little bit more kind of on the fringe side where it was like, like drugging opponents, like actually like drugging opponents, and then, you know, beating some up on, you know, some alleyway ticket sometimes, beat them up.
Okay, like listen, too, beating like, up and drugging is far less concerning at this point. Like when you've already crossed the line of you're like, we're going to murder people and frame it as cryptid.
And
you're like, oh, now we're drugging. You're like the line of like, oh, like that to me, I'm like, yeah, at least we're not doing that anymore, huh? Right.
And then there was a big, I didn't get time to get really like into it, like for this case file, mainly focused on the vampire stuff. But there's a whole line of reasoning out there that it was like this whole thing was not necessarily to get like US, like, how was it? It wasn't like US. Like corporations, it was more like to get away to like strategically like launder gold that they had recovered like through the Philippines and into somewhere. I can't remember where, but that was one of the conspiracy theories.
This was all a smoke and mirror operation. Yeah, just because they're like, we stole
all this recovered gold that we had from the Japanese forces. We're gonna launder it through the Philippines and then like, whatever. Oh yeah, like,
that was one of the can't legally have this gold, but.
So yeah,
like why couldn't you just melt it down? Just melt down the gold. Like, make some ingots.
Yeah, this is that,
right? Everyone's got an ingot or two, yeah. Right? So all of a sudden you're just like, oh yeah, these have always been our ingots. Just
put your stamp on it. Like this is mine.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Yeah,
it's like, or I dug it up. You know, it's gold is everywhere. It comes from the ground. I just dug it up. Like, you know, so like. The CIA is kind of known for these things. So we've talked about them other ones, like kind of CIA doing these like kind of spooky ops.
And we've got more to come on Confidential. Yeah, there's an endless number of fucked up things the CIA did. I think we could have a CIA podcast where you just talk about fucked up things the CIA did.
Oh, sure. Like, or like they were alleged to do. You're just like, the CIA is always, yeah. The CIA has been the boogeyman for like the last, like, you know, it's 60 years or something like that. But again, like I'll say like a lot of this stuff, like it has some root in truth because it is, you know, this was the result of like very little political oversight and the whole like ideology at the time that were, you know, prevailing ideology that was like, hey, communism bad, do whatever you gotta anything. Do what you gotta do. Whatever it takes.
Make
essentially.
It work.
And you could write, I mean, you could draw a very easy comparison to like that and then national like homeland security stuff like after 9/11 where it was like, you know, a lot policies and stuff were kind of put on
overreach
and all of that.
Like anything into like
even though
weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, like that, those kinds of big things. But I mean the CIA back then, really was the Wild West because it was just like carte blanche to do whatever the fuck they want. If you were intelligence and you could classify something, you just did whatever it took. And then as long
as you had communism.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there, you could.
Yeah, you're a patriot.
Blank check, baby.
You're a real American.
Blank check. Well, I mean, I always love doing CIA ones. We're going to have tons of other confidentials.
Yeah, every time the CIA had Bigfoot going to drop Bigfoot into Vietnam, where they contracted the Nessie to hunt for CIA Russian subs. Yeah, we've got a lot.
Yeah, I mean, they're blowing up Russian subs saying it was the Loch Ness Monster. Like, why were they in Scotland? Find out on a future Confidential. Dan, why don't you sign us out of this one?
And as we always say on these, keep it confidential.
Bye-bye.